Ask any musician. The best music happens when the sheet music gets put aside and the gang just sits down and jams. Same thing here on The Horn. America's best liberal talk hosts free-forming together for an hour a night. Welcome to The Horn Section. Right here on the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice. Now let's crank up the jam. Here's Bob Kincaid.
What a joy it is to have a normal night. I'm sorry, I'm always a little bit unnerved when things go goofy, go sideways on the previous day, but everything has run delightfully normal this evening. We've got a full-tilt horn section for you. Peter Godbold is here.
Hello.
John Fox is here.
Yo.
I'm here. You're there. We's everywhere.
My savoir-faire is everywhere.
Precisely, mais oui. Bless his heart, Mark Levine threatened to do his show earlier today in French. That reminds me. Oh, dear.
Did he really?
Yeah.
That would have been fun.
Yeah, I connected on the host connection, and he said, Bon après-midi, Monsieur Bob. Comment ça va? And I said, Ça va bien, et tu? And he went, Oh, ça va bien, tu parles français? I said, Oui, un peu. And then he said, And then he went off and said, I'm going to do my show in French today. And I said, good for you. Because well, my high school French was worn out at that point.
Don, you should do your show in Australian one day. That would be great.
Me? Was that to me or was that to Bob?
No, that was you.
It was you. You could do it whole thing in Australia. And I could do mine in Dixie.
I've failed with the Australian thing. It's all y'all's influence too.
Well, my American please.
Yeah, my American came back once we started playing this game.
Yeah, you have. Yeah, in the very beginning, you very distinctly would form the words in a way that you're accustomed to hearing them, and slowly but surely we're Americanizing you again. It's really quite easy.
Well. You know, I mean, for most of the day while I'm working, I have the network on. So half of my media input is U.S. media, you know. What do you reckon?
Yeah, but, that, you know, there's still a little bit there. I mean, I can hear it because that's definitely, you know, knowing your background and so forth, John. I talk to you, and I'm not hearing a guy from the exit over by Bayonne.
Well, I never spoke that way, though. See, there's part of, you know, where people get it wrong. That whole Joisey thing really is a specific area, and a whole lot of the state doesn't sound anything like that.
That's true. You know that, yeah, because that's like it's like some sort of a. There's the Philly accent, and it slides on up into New Jersey, and then it sort of crooks over to the east and becomes New York.
Well, yeah, and there's this kind of Newark thing, which has a New York influence, and I don't know, it was just one of those things. Okay, that's the stereotype. Fine.
Joe Piscopo. Yeah, you from Jersey? Yeah, I'm from Jersey. Yeah, what exit? Yeah.
What exit? Which accent? That's priceless thought.
The response is always, you know, in the chat room at Jersey, you know, 18A. And, you know, you automatically know that the area of the state the person's talking about, you know. I mean, unfortunately, it does hold true.
Well, it's not a terribly large state.
No, but there's a lot of people in it.
True enough.
Still the most densely populated state in the union, right?
And good on them. You know, the, John, they did a really decent thing this week.
Is this the gay marriage thing?
No, they're not going to kill people in the name of the state of New Jersey anymore.
Oh, that's right.
I
knew it was. I knew it was something way up there. Yeah, death penalty no longer. That's fantastic, and they're taking that whole, you know, we've seen too many mistakes angle, and I think that makes it an easier argument. You know, we've just made mistakes, and can we live with ourselves knowing that, you know, that we've killed innocent men and women.
I'm still waiting for the New Jersey Family Coalition to come out and state that this is another assault on the family.
No doubt.
Sorry, I just...
You know, since I have you guys here, the reason that I brought you here...
Colonel Mustard, dining room, lead pipe.
Peter Godbull, dance hall, disco ball.
Jesus. I don't know how much press it's gotten over there, the Bali thing, you know, the environmental conference signing thing, and how the United States was booed from the floor at one point in the last minute. You know, we really gotta come to something here.
No, I don't think there was any coverage about us being booed from the floor. I think they just skipped that part.
Oh yeah, booed by thousands. When the U.S. said, you know, we're not gonna entertain these kinds of cuts, flat out, and they just booed them. And finally, the United States came in and said that they would become part of the consensus. So, in effect, the United States has said that they will follow Kyoto. They haven't ratified it, but they've basically said, okay, we'll play your game, because China and Indonesia, or in India, have agreed to much more binding caps. And I think that the U.S. is finally being pressured by the rest of the world.
One of the few things I did see, John, was, of course, some freak on Fox. Boy, that sounds like a Dr. Seuss book, doesn't it? some freak on Fox in a box with socks. The Bali Protocols giving several knocks. Putting out this business about, they're lying. They're just lying. You know, Al Gore's lying again. You know, he's a serial liar, Al Gore.
The other part of it, the disappointing part, is that, you know, like Kevin Rudd, who went in with, you know, really high expectations, and he has done some pretty cool stuff while there, in bridging the gap between the developed world and China. However, he kind of still sided with the U.S. on not quite going for concrete targets yet. However, 2009, we're going to have them, by God. And to me, that sounds like, you know what, at this point, screw Bush. We are, as a body, going to move forward, and they're now on notice.
Well, John, tell me, you follow this more closely than I do. One of the objections that was put forward was that Russia, for instance, is hotly opposed to this on the same grounds as the United States, and that I think Japan is opposed to it. Are you aware of anything along those lines, or was Fox just lying again?
Well, they kind of, you know, dance a little bit on both sides, however, have gone with the consensus over, you know, recent history. So they will be the ones to bring up issue, which is fine. You know, I mean, the whole point is that this is negotiation. They didn't act in any obstructive way that I've seen in a report of during this meeting. I know that they usually are pretty good about raising concerns about, you know, whether or not the cuts between the developed world and the third world, or the developing world, or however you want to put it, how fairly to either one, you know, discussed cuts are going to be. And so they can, you know, they can be a little bit the stick in the mud, but I think usually it's good for the debate, and they usually end up going with the consensus anyway.
Well, John, as someone who pays close attention to the environmental world, I thought it would be only fair to let you know that the Republican presidential candidate, the Reverend Mike Huckabee. And I know, we've talked about him a good bit, but there's just so much, it's hard to leave him alone.
No, we could trash him for years.
He authored a book back in 1998 called Kids Who Kill.
Did he really? He wrote it?
Yeah. He co-authored
Kids
it.
Who Kill.
Kids Who Kill, Confronting Our Culture of Violence. And the Reverend Mike, John, wants you to understand that abortion, environmentalism, AIDS, pornography, drug abuse, and homosexual activism have fragmented and polarized our communities. You're a community fragmenter, John Fox. You homosexual activist, drug abusing, pornography reading, abortion loving, AIDS coddling environmentalist. You.
You know, that's grounds for shunning.
Well,
Bob.
You know, I'm not perfect. I'm not perfect, but you don't need to hold it against me.
There's so much here. There's some for you, some for me, and some for Peter too.
It really is. I think they covered us all here, and I'm surely going to hell because I blamed it on the church a little while ago.
Oh, it's well, no. You may be, but there will be a longer list, Peter, according to the Reverend Mike.
Oh, that's true.
Because homosexuals are the same thing as necrophiliacs.
Well, yeah, I'm hearing the list and thinking, wow, that's far-reaching. It's an interesting
check it out.
Grouping you got there.
Yeah, this is from his book. It is now difficult to keep track of the vast array of publicly endorsed and institutionally supported aberrations from homosexuality and pedophilia to sadomasochism and necrophilia.
This is Mr. Magic Underpants.
No. No, this
oh,
is...
Oh, no, that's right. That's the other one.
Yeah,
that's
this is the Reverend Mike Huckabee.
The Baptist preacher.
You know...
I know the names all run together, John. It's hard to keep track of one piece of evil from the other. It's all sliced from the same pie, anyway.
You know, I'm seeing it from, a bit of an arm's distance from over here, and it just looks like such a disturbing circus. You know, it just... It's starting to look like the bogus elections that we'd see in tin pot democracies in the, you know, in the 70s or 80s. You know, it just looks like it's a big dog and pony show because someone else has made the decision already anyway. It's getting to be a bit surrealistically creepy.
Well, we all hate it when I sing, but I'm going to anyway. It's beginning to look a lot like theocracy everywhere you go.
I could dance to that.
This is just... And, John, see, you are... It looks from where you are, and God knows I... kind of wish I was where you are, because I could look and go, oh, look at the funny, crazy people. But
you know, there is a wonderful feeling being out of the country. I've been to Canada, okay, so that's not really that far away, but I remember the week or so I spent in Vancouver, B.C., what a wonderful perspective it was to think that all of that BS was behind me. It gets really bright. For some reason, at least for me, it did.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I sometimes just think about you all over there and just think how horrible it's got to be. I mean, you know, it got a little rough here, but we still at least had the system in place where we could get rid of the idiot. And the good people of Australia did. So it's, you know, things are kind of looking a little bit more sane. And it's interesting once you don't have a party in power blocking freedom of information requests, there's just all this information coming out about how, you know, they really weren't that bright with the economy. And things could be a little rough in the future, and it doesn't have anything to do with the current government. And, you know, I mean, it's just the dust is still flying over here. It's a riot. And the this afternoon, I watched addressing the National Press Club was the head of the Liberal Campaign Party chair dude, the guy who was responsible for the loss. And it was his first public speaking engagement since they got annihilated. And as gently as they could, the press were kind of beating the absolute crap out of him. It was, you had to kind of feel for the guy.
Until you realized, you know, who you were feeling for, kind of.
Oh, and then all, you know, there's all this, you know, kind of feigned, I don't know, understanding, and then denial about what really drove things, you know, and they, you know, someone would point some things out, and he'd say, you know, and it was just kind of like the talking points still came through, and you know, they could, there are people talking about that it's very possible that they could disappear as a party altogether before the next election if they're not careful. And that would be a wild thing to experience.
Oh, I pray for the same sort of thing every night, John. You know, I don't know. I pray for the Republican Party to be retaken by followers of Eisenhower or something.
Yeah.
But they, you know,
the thing about the Republican Party is that none of them, absolutely none of them, seek any common ground. It's always these huge lines of division. Time after time, it's the division,
and
it's the division that matters.
And that's what's so fascinating about all this stuff from Huckabee. He blames, you know, that this is all about school shootings and stuff. And he says, despite all our prosperity, pomp, and power, the vaunted American experiment in liberty seems to be disintegrating before our very eyes. And then he gives the list of the abortion, environmental, AIDS, pornography, drug abuse, and homosexual activism have fragmented and polarized our communities. Well, pardon me, guys, but it would seem to me that the women who want to do with their bodies as they please are more than happy to mind their own daggum business. The environmentalists will sit down and shut up if corporate America will just stop poisoning us. The pornographers, well, you know... I haven't seen anybody forcing copies of the Hustler into the hands of a six-year-old outside the school gate. You know, hey, kid, the first one's free. Drug abuse, drug and alcohol abuse are functions. You're going to have.
Well. I'll tell you one thing. But, you know, you want to get a look at the drug abuse thing. I mean, you can point that squarely at Bush, because before we went into Afghanistan, there was only really garbage, bloody heroin available at really exorbitant prices. And now Afghanistan feeds 80% of the world's addicts with heroin that is more pure than has ever been seen in history.
Reminds me of the words of that great Republican president, Silent Cal Coolidge, the business of America is business, and that includes heroin.
Yep.
But what just sort of jumps out at me, guys, is this this laundry list he gives is straight out of the Falwell Robertson playbook. This is the very same thing as Falwell and Robertson sitting there on September 12th, 2001, saying, "Well, you know, the lesbians made 9/11 happen. That and the secularists and the ACLU, they've got to answer for this."
I never,
well,
you know.
I was about to say, this reminds me so much of an article I was reading earlier about what it's like for LGBT folks in Iraq right now, that before we went in and ruined the economy and everybody's starving and trying to, you know, to buy a loaf of bread for some, you know, basically everybody's very, very poor, it's hand to mouth, that before all that happened, in fact, the LGBT community was pretty much tolerated. I mean, there was, as long as you, like, kept yourself and went to the gay bars that were, like, all painted over the door. You know, nobody really bugged you. But now that the economy is falling apart and the religious fundamentalists have taken over, now they're fair game. They're being killed left and right. And with what's happening here in the housing, you know, the worse things are for any individual person, the more tendency there is to blame somebody. And I think we're it these days. I may be taking too high of a profile of myself in that, but I think we're it.
Well, no, it's you're clearly it.
Yeah.
I've been saying it
for a few years, Peter. You know, I've been saying that you know, you all are the new Red Scare. And how that came about, I'm not exactly sure. You know, why it's you lot. I've never been able to figure that out. But that's just, it's been one of the weapons of choice of the wedge issue people.
But consider for a minute, I suppose, Peter, John, we are so used to hearing this kind of vile rhetoric from the religious right and the right in general, that to a certain extent we just sort, you know, water off a duck's back. But if you stop for a minute and you hear these words and you hear the content and the import of what this guy is talking about, this is something that environmentalists, civil libertarians, the gay activists should be screaming from the rooftops, because this guy represents the thinking of a whole bunch of Americans, and it ought to scare you bad enough to make it hard to get to sleep at night. Listen to this.
I agree. And my guest earlier also added in the progressive Christians to that group. They ought to be screaming to the rooftop in addition to all the others.
And you know, Huckabee had words for them, too. But consider, this man says that what he calls the vast array of publicly endorsed and institutionally supported aberrations. In other words, anybody living their lives in a way except for how the Reverend Mike Huckabee says you should be living it, you are an aberration, you are an aberrant person. And he equates, this is a quote, from homosexuality and pedophilia to sadomasochism and necrophilia. This man has equated two men who love each other or two women who love each other to someone having sex with a corpse.
Well, of course, my mind boggles. I can't fathom. And it's the choice of words. Aberration is a very strong word, and it's meant to pull out those lizard instincts.
And the way this thing parses out, again, from homosexuality and pedophilia. So homosexuality and pedophilia are conjoined. With the conjunction and, homosexuality and pedophilia to sadomasochism and necrophilia. Now, the last I checked, homosexual relationships, and frankly, whether it be gay or straight, S&M relationships are consensual relationships.
Last time I checked, they wouldn't be consensual on my part. I'm not really interested, but yeah.
Now, granted, the great thing about necrophilia is never having to say you're sorry, but, you know, we're not going to go there. Okay, sorry.
And they never roll over on your side of the bed.
They never roll over. Oh, yeah, it's a dead act.
But dumb.
You know what? I've got Ferg's snare drum here, home for the Christmas break. I'm bringing it in, guys. But seriously, these kinds of words are the foundation for a culture that wants to build ovens, if you know what I mean.
Exactly.
Oh yeah. And I just am so amazed how much traction in this day and age this kind of just filth can get. It makes me somewhat depressed for the human race that we still have this kind of mentality that could actually be enough of a force to be of concern. And I still have reservations about the time spent on this particular character on whether we're just doing him a favor. You know, boy, sure, you know, he sure riles up the left, you know. I just...
Well, see, John, I don't.
You know... Okay.
And I'll give it some level of justification. If this guy succeeds in the Republican primaries, he is going to succeed on Republican votes.
That's okay? Right. Oh yes. Mm-hmm.
So the Republicans will choose who they want to choose, but this guy is so wacky that it is easy to look at him and say, oh, you know, and just, you know, go into the immediate Bugs Bunny voicing. Oh, what an ultra maroon. Because he is. But if we, for one moment, don't warn America about this man,
okay,
and he becomes the nominee, and he runs against whomever the Democrats nominate, I tell you now, fellas, he's got a real chance of winning.
This concerns me, too, I completely agree with you. I know. I live here. I know what the South's like. Bob, you do, too.
Yeah, keep your ear to the ground when you go to church Sunday, Peter. See how long it takes before somebody says, you know, I have a lot of respect for Mike Huckabee.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
He's a man of God.
He is, and he's very dangerous because not only does he know how to hate, he knows how to encrypt that into the gospel way of speaking, and to make people feel right about it. And, you know, you mentioned it's time to build the ovens. Well, you know, there has been one of them that's commented recently that we don't need to use, you know, bullets and ovens. I mean, we're supposed to use rocks anyway, and besides, the rocks are plentiful, and everybody can get a hold of one.
Christian Reconstructionist, you know. Sure. He goes on in his
book.
And
they're doing it.
And he said, and you know, and he says, and bear in mind, Peter, based on what you said just a few minutes ago, remember that there is only one group that is more hated than gay people.
Who? Tell me, please.
Atheists.
Oh, see, Peter,
right.
I told you.
Thank God, there's somebody left for me to look down on. Praise Jesus.
I told you.
Men who have rejected God and do not walk in faith are more often than not immoral, impure, and improvident. They are prone to extreme and destructive behavior, indulging in perverse vices and dissipating sensuality, and they, along with their families and loved ones, are thus driven over the brink of destruction.
You know, Frozy's pointing out in our chat room that the voting machines will also play a major role. I have to agree with him. With the religious smooth speak and the voting machine tilt, and I think they have a good... They learned last time they didn't tilt the machines quite far enough. I think they know now they need to do a mega tilt. And I think Frozy's got a good point. That's going to be...
Oh, he absolutely does. I mean, and there's been, you know, there's been some progress. There's been some decertifications and so forth. But these people are not going to give up. You know, the voting machines might get thrown out this time. But there's way too much money involved in the process for them to just give up and walk away. This is how they get it done. Caging lists, machines. Yeah, go ahead, John. Sorry.
Well, I know that we've done some, you know, decertification stuff, but the bit that always struck me as being just completely, you know, how do you even sleep at night, was the secretaries of state also being the heads of the Bush-Cheney campaigns in so many states.
Oh, there you go. And that's the, what's her name, makeup woman with the trowel.
Oh, yeah, and she was one of like...
Catherine Harris.
Like 20?
Thank you.
Catherine Harris, and there were many others.
And Blackwell in Ohio.
Who were secretaries of state and the state, you know, heads of the Bush-Cheney campaign. So, I mean, there, you know, conflict of interest, hello.
Oh, yeah. So, you know...
Has there been any motion there to, you know, stop that kind of thing from happening? Because that's where the obstruction to looking into weird... Yeah, see, that's what worries.
No.
Because
no, that would
it's at that level where you get to ask questions.
And no.
Okay.
And so, you know... There's so much that's on the line, and you know, I would love. Well, no, I'm
everything
not really.
Everything is on the line.
I'm tired. I'm deliberately staying out of the Democratic discussions and Democratic debates and so forth because I'm at a place, and I don't know about either of you, but I'm in a place where, despite how frustrated I get, I still know what a president will do. This next president will do to the Supreme Court of the United States.
Yeah.
And I know if we don't have some balance on it, we are well and truly done. Not for 4 years, not for eight, but for 40.
Yes.
That's an entire
lifetime, and probably yours too, Bob. That's all of our. I mean, you know, we're not.
Yeah. That's an entire American generation.
Mm-hmm.
And so, whoever you know, I'm at a place, and you know, I'm sure it chaps a lot of people's butts, but I'm at a place in my world where I am content saying, I'm going to vote for the Democratic nominee. I'm gonna. You know, our good friend Scott from Massachusetts was on the show the other night and made a strong point for letting, you know, treating the Democratic Party like somebody on a bender and letting them bottom out and letting them crash. And then, you know, stepping in with the intervention and walking the steps with what's left of the Democratic Party. And I understand that. But I can't help coming back to the Supreme Court every time I consider that because oh yeah sure okay you know that'd sure bust the party and I'm not gooning on anybody who feels that way because I understand it. But we're talking about 40 years with the Supreme Court, so I'm pretty sure I'll be voting for whoever the Democratic nominee is. I'm thinking more and more there's a better and better chance that nominee might be John Edwards. You know, I want Kucinich, but I'll settle for Edwards.
Well, Bob, have you heard anything lately about the Republicans funding an independent, you know, like another Nader or something? Because I believe that's what they're doing in Florida. They basically the RNC funded the marriage amendment people to the tune of $300,000 to get this on the amendment, to get this on the ballot, simply to, you know, to bring out the voters. So are we going to have another split with them funding a independent? Have you heard anything about that?
The only person I can imagine, and I don't think the Republicans would necessarily fund it because he doesn't damage us. The only independent candidacy I can see out there right now is perhaps Ron Paul, but I don't think even Ron Paul would break with the party. Republicans don't break with the party.
No, they're too wrapped up in the BS.
And I don't think Dennis Kucinich, understanding what's at stake, I don't think he would run a third party candidacy. So you know, there's no unless Nader himself does it again. But I think even Nader realizes his race is run and his sun is set.
I hope to God so.
So it's you know.
Well, you know the fundamentalists were saying just recently, as a couple of months ago. That they were perfectly willing to vote, this was by a large margin, they were perfectly willing to vote for an independent candidate. And I think that the time that they were looking for a Focus on the Family, a Dobson, a, you know, one of those people. But now they have all of that in Huckabee.
Yes, they
so
do.
There's no, they do.
And where before they were sort of, you know, marginalized and disorganized and feeling really bummed out, they're rallying behind Huckabee. Now the other thing to bear in mind, you've got that hateful marriage amendment on the ballot in Florida.
I'm ashamed of it. I think it's awful. It'll be the 28th state that does it if it passes.
But yeah, I think Florida's a little bit. Personally, I don't think Florida will pass it. But the other side of that is there's another one out there that's rolling along that I've mentioned and you've probably seen. And that is this, and it's happened in four states so far. It'll be on their ballot in November. And I guarantee you, before November comes, we'll see it on more states than this. It's coming straight out of Republican National Committee headquarters. It's another one of those things to get the knuckle-walking faithful out of the churches and into the voting booths. And that is these constitutional amendments to define, you know, Jesus, it wants to come out of my mouth, but I just want to scream as it goes. To define a human being as the union of one sperm and one egg.
Yes. And then a death certificate would have to be if there was a miscarriage. It's totally backwards, but that's what they'll have to do in the ultimate sense.
I mean, John, do people talk like this down there?
I don't know.
Tell us what you really think, John.
Well, actually, you mentioned Nader, and I have an idea of how to just negate the Nader problem and actually turn it into a positive, I would think. Now, if I were, Howard Dean, and I were starting to think about how things were lining up, whoever ends up getting the Democratic nomination should make some sort of, announcement of recognition to Nader for his work in consumer affairs and things over the years, that he would oversee in their administration things like the lead in the paint from the
Well, yeah, I mean, I personally think it would be a smart thing to make him the head of the Consumer Product Safety Commission.
Right?
Yes,
so then,
all from a post. Great.
So then you pull him off, but also, in a way, instead of all the people who have been called spoilers over the last couple of elections, actually acknowledge them as saying, okay, we see your voice, we saw your voice so much, we're going to take your guy on, which means we're going to take your policy on into the mix, and let's move forward because we want you on our side, not, draining away from both sides, including us. So here, with the system, you can't get the numbers you need to really be viable. So we're going to take you on as, surrogate parent party here. And, here, your dude's good. So we're going to use him with something that really concerns you. Two birds with one stone. Bob's your uncle. And you then have all those people on board.
It's interesting you would mention something like that, John, because something similar was floated by the Clinton campaign recently. And that is this statement that, and I'm paraphrasing, so don't marry me up to the words. But Senator Clinton said one of the first things she would do would be to appoint Bill Clinton and George H.W. Bush to globetrot the world and repair our tarnished reputation.
No, that's interesting that she would mention George W. Bush, because in that sense,
George H.W. Daddy Bush.
Right. Yeah, that's what in that sense, he wasn't that bad.
Well, interesting, though, that no sooner had that left her lips or her campaign's press office than George H.W. Bush chimed in and said, oh, hell no.
Oh, did he really now?
Yeah, not this little black duck.
I love the image.
So it's okay for him and Clinton to go around the world smoothing ruffled feathers and plastering over the manifest evil and wickedness that his son has perpetrated, like the initial American response to the tsunami and stuff like that. But if Senator Clinton was President Clinton, he doesn't want anything to do with that.
Well, they're all going to say that Hillary, the real president, is Bill, and that's the way their mind works, that we have Bill Clinton again. A vote for Hillary is a vote for Bill Clinton, which is, of course, the incarnate of evil, as far as they're concerned.
Oh, well, there'll be sex. There'll be just sex all over the White House. Lock up your daughters. Well, had a lot of sex in the 90s, I guess, and a lot of people did pretty good.
I don't know why people are so enamored with him. I don't think he's that hot. Excuse me, but what is the attraction? I'm sorry, I just don't get
that's,
it.
That's okay. So it had to be said, I guess. But I tell you what, you get in the same room with him, Peter, and it's like being in the same room with Elvis or the Beatles. It really is. You should see how people respond. It blew me away when I was down in Charleston a couple of months ago.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the press at the rope line, I said, if I hear Who music, I'm out of here. And Clinton looks up and goes, that's funny. And
so he's an endearing, charming old bag.
Oh yeah, he is, and you can see. Look, let me just put it this way: we're talking about Huckstrebe a little bit. The same charm that was so obvious in Bill Clinton is in a, well, I don't know. Huckabee does the same thing for fundamentalist Republicans that that Clinton did for normal people. Really, I'm not kidding. I mean, there's that sort of, there's something you can trust. There's something you can hang your hat on. There's something you can feel good about. There's something inspiring. And
it's the hallmark of the branding of Clinton over the years. You know, I mean, that's one of the problems with the system now is, you know, I don't know if you've seen that film, Can Mr. Smith Still Get to Washington, or Get to Washington Still?
Yeah.
You know, it's about branding so much. And, you know, right now we've got the Bush and Clinton brands. And it just kind of, you know, I'm just not into that dynasty thing, guys.
Well, neither am I. But I'm not concerned with, I'm really not concerned with there being a dynasty, because he can't be president again. And frankly, no matter how hard they try, they can't make Senator Clinton into Bill. What made Bill Bill?
Yeah.
What made Bill Bill was where he grew up and how he grew up.
Oh yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. I still reckon he was the best Republican president in American history. You know, but there's right now we have an entire generation of people who have grown up with only a Bush or a Clinton running the country.
And that's a damn shame.
You know, well, my eldest daughter is one of those people. She has never lived in a world that doesn't have a Bush or a Clinton in the presidency of the United States.
God, what a perspective she must have.
but there, you know, consider, I mean, and this stuff really is, you know, up bolt right at 3 o'clock in the morning with a cold sweat on your forehead stuff. Consider, guys, every child born since October 2001 has never known anything but a nation at war in this United States. They've never known anything but a nation that is so terrified that it is scared of its own shadow. Now, what kind of adults do you think that's going to make?
Well, considering history isn't taught until you get to college, the ones that don't make it to college, they're going to think that it was always like this and this is how it should be. They'll have no perspective.
So, I mean, there's always a lot at stake with any election process, but it seems that with every passing one, each one gets the stakes get a little bit higher. And the outcome is a little bit starker. And we keep getting dragged further and further to the right.
It's been so much more stage managed. And I think that started with the Nixon campaign. And ever since then, you know, you just don't have, like, open rallies anymore where, you know, candidates had to deal with hecklers from the other side, which
right, and it's
ended
got to
up
do with
showing
there's no draft, which, and the young people which, don't show up.
Yeah, you know, so I mean, but you know, it was so much less stage managed. I mean, they were talking about this in the elections here because we just had the most stage managed elections in Australian history, and the press even following, you know, Kevin Rudd would get a text message telling them to come to the bus, and that it would be a short flight, blah, 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 but it would never be told where the hell they were going. So, you know, it's all really stage-managed appearances 100% of the time. We don't really get a chance to know anything. And so then you add on that concept that you have to have a recognizable brand. You know, it's a, you know, a shadow of what the system's supposed to be, and it's just you can't run like that. It's insane.
No,
it's all on image and you know, this trademarking idea.
And what you get out of that is a country that is, well, it's a bag of marshmallows. You know, a five pound box of bags of marshmallows is a big damn box. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But there's nothing in it. And as a result of that, you wind up with the recipe for disaster. You wind up with the Mississippi Gulf Coast, and you wind up with this. This blew me away when I saw it a little bit ago. Dateline Washington, the Reuters news agency: the United States remains unprepared for disasters ranging from biological attacks to a flu pandemic, and funding preparedness is falling, according to a report released today.
Oh, brilliant.
Many states still lack a stockpile of drugs, masks, gloves, and other equipment needed to battle a pandemic of diseases despite 5 years of... And see, this isn't something that requires George Bush to put on his little black hat and his little black coat and his little black boots and plant little black bombs anywhere. This is the damn flu.
Yes, and the whole bird flu thing fell off the radar, and it hasn't gone away, but they just have dropped it.
Okay, guys, tell me, is it a figment of my imagination, or did something that used to be, you know, was what FEMA is now, used to every, I think it was 2 years, released a little booklet, you know, kind of like a small book, and it had some really clever illustrations and what to do in the case of all different types of disasters. You know, struck by lightning, floods,
yeah, like civil defense.
You know. Yeah, yeah. And in that, you were given all this information, and along with it was the list of all the local contact numbers for, you know, all the services. This is something that we had. And I mean, I remember these books, and as far as I know, they're not a figment of my imagination. They came out every couple of years.
No, I remember them, too. I haven't seen them in years, but I know what you're talking about.
And they were clever enough that, like, you know, you'd actually pick them up once in a while and have a look through them just because, you know, they were, like, a really brilliant way to get the point across and kind of get it, you know, glued into the brain. So where did things like that worked...
Well, that requires tax money. You know, those are they're just humongous printing costs and things like that. And the Republican Party that believes that government can't do anything right in the first place and proves it every day they're in power, opted instead to have some geek walk out to a microphone and tell America to buy duct tape and plastic sheeting and plenty of bottled water. I'm not kidding.
And they bought it.
I mean, this report, yeah, they did, Peter. This report was generated by the Trust for America's Health, a nonprofit, non-biased, unaffiliated organization. Listen to this list. Now, bear in mind, we have been told for 7 long years now that the sky is falling, and Chicken Little has walked out after the band plays "Hail to the Chief" and told us, you know, the terrorists want to kill America. All right, dig it. Okay, this is some of the stuff the report found. 13 states don't have adequate plans to distribute emergency vaccines, antidotes, and medical supplies from the Strategic National Stockpile. 21 mm-hmm. states don't have statutes that allow for adequate liability protection for healthcare volunteers during emergencies. 12 states don't have a disease surveillance system compatible with the Centers for Disease Control. 7 states have not purchased a single portion of their federally subsidized or unsubsidized antivirals to use during a pandemic flu. 7 states and Washington, D.C. lack sufficient capabilities to test for biological threats. Now, our homeland security budget is monumental. What have we bought? We clearly haven't bought the things that we need. And you know, I understand stuff like this. I mean, diseases do break out. There's all kinds of weird shit that, pardon my mouth, washed up out of the sea after Katrina. You know, weird stuff that we hear about all the time. And it is possible. You know, remember, a right-wing freak tried to get an anthrax epidemic going.
Yep.
There are, you know, we've got disease labs in this country that are trying to genetically replicate the 1918 flu strand that wiped out, you know, more people than the freaking Black Plague. One of those things gets loose, you know, game on.
It sounds like, you know, as the Republicans are good at doing, they've done the deals to get the gear, but they haven't done anything about the human aspect of getting things done. So obviously, you know, they need to employ people to get this stuff done. It's always been afforded before. There's no excuse for this kind of stuff.
Peter, what were the early mortality rates for HIV/AIDS? Do you know offhand?
Well, the early mortality rates were 100% because there was no treatment.
And
is that what you're getting at?
That's part of it. And when it began passing, how many people were dying a year?
Well, that's not really sufficiently tracked at the very, very beginning. But first, it was only hundreds, and then it moved to, you know, it's one of those expansions that are it's not linear. It leaps and, you know,
yeah, it's exponential.
Fashion. Right, that's the word I was looking for. And then, so you know, first it's hundreds, then it's thousands, and then quickly the tens of thousands. It operates very quickly. And then, of course, the first line of defense for it was AZT. That was the only drug there, and it only worked for about a year. So, you know, it delayed. But,
yeah.
You know, now they're so even the increments of the effectiveness of the drugs is very slow.
Well, I ask that because of this very interesting little piece of information. The World Health Organization, which is a function of the UN, I believe, you know, that useless UN that all the right-wingers always want us to pull out of, the World Health Organization is currently studying a cluster of human H5N1 bird flu cases in, of all places, Pakistan. Boy, doesn't that just set the little alarm bells off?
Yep, and it does, yes.
Where they believe there's been human-to-human transmission of that bird flu virus. 340 people have been infected since 2003, and 209 have died. Those are not nice statistics.
Number.
They say, oh, wow, it's only 340 people. That's since 2003. Now, let that blossom exponentially like what Peter was just talking about.
It moves quickly.
Well, and I remember a few months ago that there was a debate program over here where the whole thing of bird flu came up. And the one of the doctors that was on the panel, he said, but I have one question about all of this. Everyone's intentions are fine, and what you're trying to do is great. However, if this is supposed to be a bird flu, why don't we have any vets involved in this? Supposedly, in all of this, it's all human medical doctors dealing with a bird flu. Don't you think they should actually be looking from the other side as well?
Well, it certainly makes sense to me. A vet has got to bring a different perspective to it, and why not?
Exactly. And with this, and you know, I'm not trying to you know, be an alarmist or anything. I'm not. But you know, one, they found this cluster in Pakistan, which just I'll say it. I'll be all paranoid. I wouldn't put it past the CIA to drop a nasty strain of flu in the middle of Pakistan, hoping to wipe out Osama bin Laden in the middle of, you know, wiping out, you know, 90,000 other human beings with a, you know.
Oh, hell no. I'm surprised we haven't done it in Iraq and caused it and said it was because the sewers are backing up, whatever, you know, disease.
Well, you know, who's to say we haven't? Cholera.
Pakistan, they could get a little bit of a problem that they've got at the moment.
Well, the radiation is there, of course, but that's a little slow.
But the point here is that, you know, transmission methods for HIV/AIDS were somewhat limited, rather significantly limited. This is a damn flu virus. It aerosolizes. It enters by breathing.
Yes, entirely different ball game, and it's going to multiply faster, and if that's the case, and put one person on an airplane. And there you go. They're going to land in LaGuardia and start it at every city in the country.
Yeah, and go. You know, and they'll get off the airplane and get and walk into a building with more recirculated air.
Mm-hmm.
And boom.
Buses, taxi cabs.
Yeah.
Boom.
And you know, I don't want to terrify anybody or anything. But honest to Pete, we have poured billions into Homeland Security, and apparently it's all gone to programs that are concerned about the underwires in 80-year-old women's bras.
Yep. Absolutely, it seems that way to me too. It's not real.
We've got a tremendous foot inspection program, probably the best on the planet.
It comes as no surprise considering the fetishes the Republicans have.
You know, I deliberately sat still for a minute so you could go there because I knew you would.
Oh, how well you know me! Is it a musical?
So, you know, the stuff just worth paying attention to, because, you know, and that's the beauty of some of the stuff that goes on here, guys. And I'm really glad that we can get together and have these conversations in between your show and the beginning of John's, Peter, because this conversation isn't happening anywhere else in America. Can
really
you imagine
isn't.
That?
I'm so proud of it. I really am, and I thoroughly enjoy doing them, and I take it the listeners do too. I think it's something that needs it's well past it.
So you know it's keep an eye out. Anything that doesn't make it off the desk for any of your individual shows, for heaven's sakes, bring it along for this one, because there's so much stuff out there. There is no way humanly possible that we can catch it all.
Bob, it's so true. I have a stack 2 inches thick of stuff that I haven't gotten to yet. As you know, if it hasn't been on my show, it hasn't happened yet. I have to do it at some point.
I mean, I've got the Texas evolution debate story here. You know, more wedge issues.
Oh, cool. I don't know that one. You'll have to bring that up tomorrow.
Oh, I will. You know I will. And it's sickening on the one hand, but, you know, what Wayne said to me at the end of my show this evening, there's real stuff that needs to be talked about in very few places in this country where people do. And ELO's telling me in the chat room that the Senate is still in session. How much you want to bet Limbaugh Jr. gets confirmed tonight? You know that, don't you, guys? A nephew,
I'm horrified.
A nephew of Rush Limbaugh is being elevated to the federal court.
Oh, good God! No. And I was living in such ignorant bliss, and now my life is ruined. This is for real.
Yes, yeah. I wouldn't play with you at that. I wouldn't toy with you on that level, Peter.
Well, maybe ELO can post us a link to it. What's it on C-SPAN?
Yeah, C-SPAN 2.
I mean, do we? Do we know that he's as disgusting as Limbaugh, or?
Oh yeah.
Don't we?
Oh, he's a complete turd. Yeah, you know, he just is.
I bet he's got little shriveled Oxycontin testicles.
Little raisin balls. Yeah, that'll put me off raisins for a week. Hey guys, we've done it again.
Okay.
And in the thank you both so much, and in the immortal words of the late, great Lowell George.